Okay, so my name is Prince Kalcha. I represent Victory Non-Block in Rice. This is a joint collaboration between Lisa Kalcha with Sarah Scholar and Raju, my advisor from Florida International University, and Akshay Verma from IBM Research India. So I wanted to start by, next slide. I wanted to start by explaining what is the current system, how current systems work. And I have a diagram here with a subset of all the components. The first one is the application. Then we have the operating system. Next, we have the RAM, and finally the disk that has some data that applications want to access. The thing with how applications access the data is that applications can access data directly from disk, but they rather have to go to RAM first. So let's see how we can start by how the applications would access it. So there are two methods. Next slide. There are two methods to access data. And let's say that for this example, let's say that the PHR is in RAM, right? So next slide. We have the first method is it's the read or write system calls. And these calls are done to the operating system, obviously, and the operating system write or read the data from RAM, and finally it returns the data to the application. Right? The second method, next slide, is the using MMAP. And the idea with MMAP is that the page is mapped to the access space of the application, and the application can access the data directly without going through the operating system. So let's see what would happen in case an application tries to access a page that is not yet in memory. So next slide. So let's start with a read and out of port page. In a read and out of port page, let's say that application tries to read, the page is not in memory. So next slide. Then the page has to be read from the disk into memory. Next slide. And now the queue page is in RAM, right? So now that the queue page is in RAM, the application can finally read the data. Next slide. Okay, next slide. Now let's see how an write to an out of port page would work. So in this case, the page has to be brought to memory. So next slide. The page has to be read from this.
So Luis, I think you can drop the next slide. I think it's more or less intuitive. So, and that will make it easier for you.
Okay. Then the page B will be in memory. Next slide. And then finally, the application can write. Right, next. So in this paper, we're concerned about this read from this. Next slide. So in the red, we're concerned about the read that is the red arrow, right? And what we are trying to do is to, next slide, eliminate this read and make this read go in parallel with the application. Right? Now the application doesn't have to block. Waiting for the page to be in memory before it can write. Next slide. We saw either by inspecting code or documentation that Linux, BSD, and Xen all have this behavior. Okay, next slide. So you should be at slide 3 right now. Okay, so let's start with a basic approach of the non-blocking write. And the basic idea is that after writing in an out-of-port page, we will offer the data that was just written. We will queue the IO request, the read IO request to this, and finally we will return the control to the application so the application can move forward. Let's see a little bit more detail on this. Next slide. So in each small diagram, we have four components. We have the process that is trying to write, the page that is trying to write the operating system and the backend. So next slide, the process tries to write and it fails because the page is not in memory. So there is a fault coming to the operating system. Next slide. Then the operating system will buffer the data. It would issue the read to the backend store, and finally it would return control to the process so the process can continue its normal operation. Next slide. The backend store will complete, and next slide, the buffer will be merged to the page that that the application tried to write before. Right. So at the end, we will have the page as if with the data, as if we didn't have any non-blocking value. Okay. Okay, next slide. So the benefit of doing something like this, the application execution time is reduced because now the application doesn't have to wait for foreground IOs to happen, but it can move forward while this is happening in parallel. And the second advantage is that we increase the backend store bandwidth usage, because now we could have multiple write calls happening at the same time. Okay, next slide. So it should be in four right now. So let's start with a small motivation. Well, the first is that these current systems have higher paywall rates, and the reason is that in virtualized environments, usually people overcommit everything. And it means that now you will have higher page faults because you have much more data or much more data that that cannot fit in memory. So the second reason is that now with multi-core and also virtualized environments, there are more processes that are ready to run, and these processes are constantly accessing data. So that means that now you have many more applications to access different data at the same time, which in turn creates also more page faults. The other reason is that the memory hierarchy is moving towards a more active backend store, and the idea is that now that there are faster devices, You can push some of the data down to faster device and allow a little bit more faults. So next slide. Now let's see just a small graph of the benefits of non-blocking writes. And so here I have a graph. In the y-axis we have the workloads, and in the y-axis I have the percentage of non-blocked faults, which is which accounts for all the faults that will not block. And in the x-axis I have all the workloads we get. Right? So we have three different types of workloads. We have image processing, developer, and server. And we see that in each of them, there is at least one workload with almost 20% of the faults that can benefit from non-blocking rights. And in the case of the server, there are even cases where the 80% of the page faults can benefit from something like non-blocking. So this was done in a simulator with full system memory traces. And we set up the simulator to have 50% we set the RAM to have 50% of application footprint. Okay, next slide. So let's see what challenges we have with a solution like non-blocking write. And well, the idea is that to do a non-blocking write, we need three key information from the write. We first need the write object to the page. We need the data written to the page, and we need how much of that data was written. Okay. So in the write system call, do you usually have that, or do you always have that information? Because that's part of the arguments of the positive rights. In the case of the fault, you usually have only the right after, and the MMU, unfortunately, doesn't provide the data reason or the size of the data. Okay? So let's see how that would that work. So next slide. It should be now in slide 6. I think. Yeah, it doesn't have a number somehow. Okay, so I present here a table with the approach, the description, and what are the advantages and disadvantages of the solution proposed. The four factors we take into account is that first, if it's fast or not, if it works for all architecture, it's architecture independent, if something or some implementation already exists that we can use, and finally, if it has a low memory overhead. So next slide. So we start with two very easy solutions. The first one is full-feature hardware, and the idea is that an MMU provides all the information, the offset, that location, and size. This would be, of course, very fast. Unfortunately, it won't work for all architectures because each GPU has to implement its own. It doesn't exist, as far as we know, and it will have a low memory overhead because we only have to save exact the data that we need. Just a small amount of data. The second approach is the upcode disassembly. And the idea is that it disassembles the fault instruction and we track all the information that we need. It is fast, even though it is in the fault path, which is a time critical path. It's not, I mean, you have to implement something like this for every path. The good news is that is widely available, usually there is implementation for almost all architectures. It exists. There are implementations of this in several projects. And it's also low memory overhead because you only need you only have the offset of the full feature hardware as well, which is only the memory. So to see how we can solve the architecture independent thing, let's see in this case, the architecture independent, none of them are architecture independent. We have a third solution that is called page disk merge. Next slide. In the page disk merge, the idea is that we write the data in two pages. A page which is full of zeros and one page which is full of ones. And then we merge these two pages with the page in the disk. And we finally have the page that we would have if we write the data directly. So I have a small diagram here with two components, process and backing store. Next slide. And now the process wants to write to a page, right? So you see that it writes data 101. Next slide. Now we allocate two pages, one full of one, one full of zero, and then we write, next slide, we write that data in both pages. Then the backing store completes, next slide. So now we have the page that we had in the disk. And we start by doing an end, next slide, with that page and the one page. And we have this intermediate result, and then we do an OR with the zero page, right? Next slide. And finally, we have the page that we would have if we write the data directly to the page that was in this. Okay? Now let's see our table again. Next slide. And so the page disk merge now is fast. It's not really fast because we have to write twice memory. And actually, the way we think it could be implemented is by doing several pods, which is not fast at all. The good thing is that it works for all architectures, it's architecture independent. Doesn't, and it's not low memory overhead. Now we need to allocate two pages in order to buffer your data as well. Right? Okay, so moving forward, next slide. You should be now in slide 9. Now let's see, let's quantify some benefits. And well, the first one is the fraction of non-blocking write calls that we already saw in the most recent slide. The second way of quantifying benefits is the outstanding write call, which will measure, which I will explain later. And the third is how much execution, an estimate of how much execution time reduction we would have in the applications that we use. So next slide. We use a virtual memory simulator that has as input RAM size and full system memory trace. And the output is that per entry we have a timestamp and event. And as a global output, it has performance, some performance stats. So the way it calculates if a page is non-blocking or not is that all slides to an out-of-core page are considered non-blocking. And the non-blocking status is revoked in case the page is read before the IO is completed, because now the application has to block waiting for that IO to happen, or the page is evicted before the IO is completed because the application again has to wait for the eviction to happen. So next slide. So in terms of the full system memory traces, we modify the x86 software MMU QEMU to log all memory traces, all memory access. We instruction counts here to be virtual physical address, access mode, and page privileges. And this is just a summary of the workloads. We have three types of workloads: server, developer, and image processing. We have 10 servers, 4 developer, 1 image processing. And in terms of the footprint, we have almost 300, 270 megabytes, and 1.50 megabytes. So next slide, let's start by quantifying some benefits and a metric we used. The question that we wanted to ask was how to measure the additional parallel. And the idea is as higher the parallelism is, the more effective is our non-blocking byte. And one way to measure that is the outstanding IOs that the application has additional. And as I said, with this metric, is that that means that if with a higher outstanding IO, it means that there are multiple write calls that are happening at the same time, right? And that means that the non-blocking write is actually doing a good job. But the outstanding IOs would include all IOs, so the application could be doing something else. These metrics, so this wouldn't work. So if we just put to create this outstanding write fault, that is basically a number of parallel write faults that are happening at any time. And just to see more or less how it works, an outstanding write fault for single thread applications will always be less or equal than 1, because you're going to have more than one write fault happening at the same time. But the only restriction that you have for outstanding write fault when using non-blocking writes is that it has to be greater than 2. Right? So now we can go much farther than 1. And I will show a graph that is actually that. So the other metric that we introduced is the expected outstanding write fault. And the idea with this expected write fault is to give a single number to see how much parallelism an application has over time. And this scripting outstanding rifle is just a time weighted average of the outstanding rifle that was happening in time. So just see how this metric would see in our workloads. We have the x-axis the workloads and the y-axis our expected outstanding rifle. In the image processing it's almost 20. In the developer, we have only one that goes beyond 20. And in the server case, we have almost all of them, at least with 10 outstanding write calls. And, well, the last one just goes up to 2,000. Well, you know, as you see with this expected outstanding, this number of expected outstanding write calls, it means that the applications actually are having benefits with non-blocking writes. They are at least on average keeping more or less 10 outstanding write calls happening at the same time. Next slide. So now we have the time reduction. Let's see how is execution time decreased in the application. These results are not in the paper right now. We didn't have time to include them. And the execution time will be just the time plus the synchronous read time. And the synchronous read time will be the read that the application does or the synchronous read that the application would do in case it stopped non-block time. So, the write time of dirty pages and evictions are ignored. We found that this is hard to estimate. And that means that, well, this is just a rough estimate, better than the paper, but it's still a rough estimate. And the error is proportional to the number of dirty pages evicted. That's, well, we found that in experience that it wasn't that much in real. So this is a graph of the percentage execution time decrease. In the this method y-axis, and in the x-axis we have the workload. So again, we see in the server case, we see increase percentage of execution time decrease of almost 60%. In the case of developer and image processing, we see two workloads that are or almost 10% of time decrease. And in the server case, we see two on the same switch. So there are cases where the non-blocking write could achieve 10%. There are other cases where, as we can see in the server, where it didn't have any change in execution time, it didn't have benefits. That's the results we have so far. Next slide. In terms of the related work, we try to find alternatives to non-blocking writes. The first alternative is to use the perfect RAM provisioning, but the truth is that usually the amount of RAM needed for an application is unpredictable or even unbounded because you cannot have as much RAM as possible. In the case of the free fetching, the prefetching will help in the same thing that non-blocking write helps, but it can incur in false positive and false negatives. And there is another option, a synchronous system call, that will, the problem is that they won't work with memory maps. They do not have data that is not yet written into memory. So next slide, this should be 14 now. In conclusions and future work, we identified a read before write problem, and we present a solution to this problem, which is the non-blocking write. We estimate a reduction time of 0.1 to 54%, and in the future, we are planning to implement non-blocking writes to better study and its implications and see what kind of applications can better benefit from this technique, right? So at this point, I will stop and I'm glad to take questions. Third 15. Okay.
You need to go. Do you have any comments for Louis?
Louis, I didn't understand.
Yeah, let Jinping speak up whatever he has to say. He needs to leave.
My suggestion is, one is the, can you move the motivation slides to the front? The slide number four, you talk about the motivation. So I just feel that maybe you should move that to the close to the beginning.
You mean the first part of the motivation?
Yeah, the first part of the motivation. Yeah. Because this is different, strange for me. This flow.
Right.
Also, the acronym, like the OIO.
OIO.
Yeah, the OIO, that acronym, I think you need to
explain
it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you mentioned three different implementing choices, right? So which one did you implement? You mentioned three different implementation, right? The hardware solution, architecture solution, the opcode solution, and the double pages, right?
Well,
so which one did you actually?
In our case, sorry, do you want to?
Yeah. So my question actually is, which one did you actually try it, and
which one did you implement?
Yeah, which one did you implement it? Did you implement? And it's not clear to me from the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just wait a second, guys, because I have to move from the conference room. So.
Okay.
So. So wait a second.
Sorry, actually, I need to go.
Okay.
So,
all right. I think we have your comments. If you have anything else, you can.
Okay. So I think you send me the paper.
Okay.
Maybe get a better idea.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure. Thank you.
Wait a second, guys. Move into another room.
Okay.
Okay.
Louis? We might have lost him. Okay.
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 I'm back. Yeah. Okay, so, sorry, I didn't get a start comment from Jinping. Where was that?
His comment was, which of the three techniques did you implement? Question.
I really didn't have to implement any of the techniques, but if I have to choose one, I would say the full feature one, because I was a CPU.
Right. So I think the message is that in the presentation you might have to clarify that these are the possible implementation techniques, and someone might misinterpret those as the techniques you implemented already. Okay.
Okay, someone's really annoying to me.
I know.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay. Any other comments?
Okay, I think Sajib had some comments too.
I think...
Okay.
Sajib, you want to come closer?
So, Luis, can you explain why is that? Why did you do those Boolean operations? I mean, what is the purpose of it? I didn't get it. I didn't quite understand it. I mean,
yeah,
the
thing is that, the first two techniques to get all the information we need for the non-blocking write, because in the case of a page fault, they both are architecture effective.
Okay.
And that means that they have to be implemented for each kind of CPU where you want to implement non-blocking write. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So this third technique is architecture agnostic.
Okay.
And the reason is that we just have to do some Boolean operations in order to get the data that we, you know, need to merge in the page on disk, right? So as you see, the good thing is that it actually cheated in some way because it doesn't change the size of the data, and it doesn't need where to find the data itself, but the pages are the buffer itself.
Yeah. So another drawback of that is that it will take a lot of memory, right?
Yeah.
You need three times as much.
Exactly.
Well, you had to clarify that it's not three times the memory footprint.
Well, it's three times. Why it's not three times?
It's not three times the memory footprint.
No, not the memory footprint, but the.
Three times what is the question?
Outstanding write fault, right?
Which is a small number.
Yes, yeah, so
which is usually not more than 30 or something. In our
times the number of pages of each write.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
I think that part has to be pretty clear in what is the overhead of the third technique, and maybe you can mention that while after you finish your table or maybe during the description of the table, what exactly is the memory overhead?
Well, I think that could go actually in a backup scenario because it's a very short time for the presentation, and I don't think it's that critical. I mean, if it comes up, you could just have it in a backup slide.
Yeah, you don't even need to have it in a slide, but it's just that, I mean, how you discuss the overhead and is important, right? Okay. Other
okay,
comments?
I have some comments here. So the first one is, so you showed, I think, slide 4 or something. Slide 4, that you show that this happens, this percentage of non-blocking faults happens a lot in some cases. But, I mean, my understanding is that this only happens with unaligned writes. Is that true?
I don't understand. What do you mean by unaligned writes?
Writes that are not aligned to 4K, to pages. So if you write a partial page or something like that.
If you write the full 4K page,
mm-hmm.
Actually you can avoid the read at all.
Okay.
But if you just miss for one byte or it's unaligned, you can do non-blocking write. And even in the current systems, I don't know how they handle that. I don't know if they do the smart thing. Right, because at the end, the CPU can only write 8 bytes at a time. Right?
I don't understand what you mean.
Okay, so what you're saying is that you have a page of 4K, right? And you try to write the full page.
Mm-hmm.
If you write a full page, you have all the data you need to fill that page.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you can ignore what is in the disk right now.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, the non-blocking write wouldn't have to do much because you don't have I/O.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have the previous read I/O.
Right. So what I'm saying is that current system, I don't know if the current operating system have that improvement as well.
Yeah, I'm almost sure they do.
They do.
Because I remember trying something. I mean, I remember seeing this problem only with online IOs, not with Align.
Yeah, but the other problem is that I don't know if the CPUs can do 4K writes.
No, they can't. Okay.
Sorry. So if you cannot do 4K writes, then you don't have all the data to do that optimization.
No, but I mean, what I'm saying is that you may not do the 4K write, but you may only, let's say, evict that page, the full page, say, right? The way I see this is that this only happens with data that is being created by the process. Right. If it's something that you previously read from disk, then you read the complete page. That's the way I see it. So this probably happens for swap on not even for swap, because for swap you always evict 4K pages. I don't know if I'm explaining myself.
Yeah, but right.
I mean, I don't see the exact case when it happens. I mean, I know it happens, but I don't know when is that. Because probably another solution could be just to tell, okay, this happens when the developer coded this dumb instruction or programming in this dumb way, and he could just try to avoid programming like that.
But based on the figure, you see all those workloads. They're all real workloads.
Yes.
And they're
being used
in production, right?
No, I do understand that, but what I don't have clear is why this happened. I mean, I know the problem. We've seen some programming agnostic solutions, but I would also like to know, in terms of programming, when does this happen?
I think, Louis, you should answer this question.
I don't know. Probably it was clear in the presentation. But the thing is that when an application tries to write, independently if it will write the full 4K at the end, will start by writing a small portion of the memory, right? It does and the fault will happen. And even in that case, the non-blocking write will have benefit.
I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Essentially, the way I see it is that this problem is exacerbated when you have few memory and you need more evictions.
Then
the OS would probably wait until you have the complete page and then evict it.
Yeah, but that's not the way it happens. The way it happens is that if you write even a byte of a page, the OS will load that full page from this.
Before we continue, can I have the other people who are not speaking mute their microphone? There is a lot of background noise. Okay, much better now.
Yes.
The thing that you think that the OS is doing, that thing about buffering the actual small change, the OS is not doing it. That's what we are proposing to do.
So you're saying that that every time there, even a small portion that is dirty, then the OS is writing.
No, it doesn't matter. I mean, don't even consider about dirting or flushing or evicting, nothing of that. It's just that if you write a byte of a page that's not in memory, the OS will load the full page from disk, put it on memory, and put your little byte written in that page.
Yeah, but it's usually an asynchronous operation, right? Right, or asynchronous.
Yeah, but even if it's asynchronous,
the write operation. You write it. The OS takes control of the buffer and returns the system call returns immediately, and then it proceeds the read and all that.
No. Sorry, I need to go. So.
All right, Daniel.
Good luck with your presentation.
Daniel, can you send comments to Lewis directly?
If I remember something else, I will write him an email or something.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
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 What you're saying seems pretty obvious, and it seems natural for all OSs to be doing that, but they actually don't. So that's what we're proposing to do.
Right. So another way to think about this, Jorge, is that when you pass a buffer to the OS, right, a user space buffer to the OS has to put that data somewhere before it returns back to the application, because the application can reuse that buffer for other things. It needs to copy over that data somewhere. So the question is, where does it copy that data into? It doesn't have anywhere else to copy that data today. I mean, because systems today work very simply that they read the entire page, and then they copy the data into the page that was read in, and then they return back to the application.
Okay, then that needs to be more clear.
Right. So.
Yeah, because that's not the way I understood it.
Yeah, but otherwise the OS will need to keep patches for all kinds of pages, right? Which is what we are proposing in non-blocking writes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now I understand it, but it wasn't completely clear on the presentation, at least to me.
Right. Yeah, I think the initial description of the mechanics of the figure was certainly good to go through the mechanics of the figure, but at the same time, I think, Lewis, you have to sort of embellish the description with some of these other details. Such as what happens today when you give a buffer to the OS, or if there is a write page fault by the application, the page has to be read in first and then modified, and even for system calls, the page has to be read in first before and the data has to be merged with the page before the OS can return back to the application.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that part was not entirely clear, right? At least to Jorge.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think for that you can use the same figure. So in slide 3, you have a figure that you use to explain your approach, right? So you can sort of use a similar figure to explain the problem. So that way it's more clear what's the difference between the problem and your approach.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because I mean, you have a completely different figure in slide 2, and then you change the type of figure in slide 3.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion.
Another thing is that another big comment is that at least for me, I always thought that anonymous pages are the most, helped. I don't know, but I thought it was all about anonymous pages. We haven't seen much of this happening for politics.
I'm not so sure. I think we'll have to do an actual study to conclude that.
Yeah, that's not true. We can in the full traces that we have right now, we cannot discriminate between file system and anonymous pages.
Yeah, so I don't understand actually why it would be beneficial for anonymous pages, because anonymous pages is something that you just allocate. You don't bring it from disk.
No, even for anonymous pages, every write you make to something that's swapped out will have this.
Oh, but it has to be swapped out, exactly. Only if it's swapped out, and that's because you have you're overcommitting memory.
That's exactly what we're saying. Yeah, if you overcommit memory, you have pages swapped out. You have no blocking write.
No, that's not what we're saying. Even if you,
I mean, that's the worst case.
Right, but even if you don't overcommit memory, you could use non-blocking writes, because you will write to pages that are not in memory. Right.
Yeah, I can see that.
They're not in memory and they're not in swap, they're full of zero. So you don't need non-blocking write.
No. Let's say you write to some random location in a file.
They're called cache. Right? So you write to a page, I think you have...
We're talking about anonymous.
Yeah, anonymous. But, my point is that non-blocking writes will also work for... non-overcommitted memory.
Right. File system pages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, I don't understand why you have that sense. I thought this would work for anything.
Yeah, but if you're not overcommitting for anonymous pages, you don't have a swap. So
okay.
There's no.
But you see a file system.
Yeah, but we're talking about anonymous pages.
But not here.
The discussion I started was about anonymous pages.
But the technique is general. I mean, we don't have to continue thinking in terms of anonymous pages now. Now that we know that we can also do this for file system pages, and it probably is easier to do it for file system pages.
No, I know we can use it for both, but I was thinking about for the general direction of the presentation, make it more from the perspective of anonymous pages and swap. Because that was the original motivation for us.
I don't agree.
I don't agree either. I mean, that could have been, I'm sure that was the original motivation in your mind. And also, temporarily, it was motivation for all of us. But now, there is no reason to continue... keeping that as the only or the primary motivation. We should keep it open at this point and give equal weight to both anonymous as well as file system pages, and not one more weight for one or the other.
Okay.
I mean, you might believe that this would be mostly relevant to anonymous pages. It's not clear to me that is true for all workloads. Or even for most workloads. Depends on the workload, right? As always.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, other comments? Sajid, what's the gist?
I can either talk to you about it, or they can send you an email later on whatever you prefer.
Leonardo, are there like high-level comments or more detailed comments? If they are editorial comments, then certainly send it to Lewis directly. But if there are high-level conceptual comments, something that was not clear to you, then we should probably discuss it.
Okay, then I will just send an email then.
Okay. And Sajib, is there any other comment that you had? Okay, so Jorge, how about you?
Another thing, I think the same thing about the page saver.
Mm-hmm.
I was having a question that, I understand why he has to do those operations, but is there a specific answer that when you do those operations, you get the page?
It has to be, right? Otherwise, your system will break.
It's done that way to cover for either writing all zeros, because if you only had a one page or a zero page, then you wouldn't know if they actually either tried to write a full zero byte or a full one byte.
Yeah.
So that accounts for the edge cases.
Jorge, do you have any other comments?
I don't
the other one was just a minor comment. So for the savings and execution time, how do you, which technique did you use to estimate that the those savings?
Was just the execution time?
Because you have three techniques, right? And three of them have different performance.
That's more or less the, the thing is that this is not a real implementation, so I didn't have to really implement the technique. I have all the information the simulator needs. But if I have to choose one, I'm the CPU, right? So if I have to choose one, I would say the full feature hardware.
But all techniques will have those same values, right?
What same
value? OWS. All techniques will end up...
No. I'm not talking about OWS. I'm talking about the execution and the...
What techniques I use, or the execution time decrease. And then I understand, what do you mean?
So it's slide 12.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So you have some graph with percentage of execution time decrease.
Okay.
Right, so which of the techniques did you use to get this numbers?
Between what techniques?
Between the three techniques that you mentioned, the three possible implementations, right? The page merge, the CPU, the hardware support, or the upcode.
Okay, so as I said, this is a simulator, so I have all the information I need. And the thing is that, you know, you can think of the in my simulator, I use either full feature hardware or the opcode disassembly, right?
Okay.
One of those two. Actually, it's not the other one. The other one should be slower because we have to write twice and so on.
Okay.
Hi, welcome in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's about the problem and the motivation. It's just that I wouldn't say that we're solving a problem. It's just that we saw an opportunity for squeezing parallelism, and we're taking. And it's just because nowadays devices perform better with parallel IOs, so we're giving them parallel IOs. That's just what we're doing, but it's not really a problem. It's not that OSs were designed badly 20 years ago. It's just that now there is this nice, you know, opportunity.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. It would be more appropriate to put it as an opportunity and how we are exploiting that opportunity versus solving an actual problem.
Yeah. I also think that you may potentially argue that this can also bring benefits to the read after, the write after read problem.
Hmm.
What is that problem?
Or like what's called small writes. So essentially you read and then do some small modification and you write back. Right? This could be possibly one of the sources of that problem.
Hmm.
For some OSs, as you saw.
With that is that you read more than what you need.
No. You read. It's called small writes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you read, and then you write back very, very quickly.
Do you have a reference for that?
No, but when you read, you still need to read the page.
Yeah. So, but this could be one of the sources of that problem.
Sources of... Oh, is that...
Or not the problem, that behavior.
You're saying that's not at the application level, but at the OS level.
Yes.
You're saying the OS is introducing a read before write?
Mm-hmm.
But when classically people talk about read, modify, write, they talk about application behavior. That application reads in some data, modifies it, and writes it.
Well, but you're not 100% sure if the application is reading the whole data. Could be the OS.
But I think they specifically refer to read, modify, and then write. So there are three steps involved.
Mm.
it may be what you're saying may be true in some instances, and but I don't think that's what the read modify write problem is actually about. That's a different problem, in at least the way it's been described in the literature. Okay, so Louis, a high level comment I have is that, I mean, the presentation, you have all the material in the presentation, but I think what I would recommend for you to think about is how you can, you know, make that material more exciting in some sense, more interesting, right? I think you did a good job of kind of presenting all the techniques and in detail, but in a hot storage talk, I think people are really looking for, you know, provocative and exciting talks, right? So any way in which you can add more, what should I say, enthusiasm, I think you should think about ways to do that. I think that's really one of the major comments that I had.
Can I suggest that, I mean, a direction for doing that could be the parallelism? Because everybody seems to squeeze parallelism, I mean, from any kind of workload for all devices. So it's just about squeezing parallelism, and we're showing a technique that actually does a pretty good job for some workloads.
Yeah. Well, I think talking about parallelism is important, but I don't know if that's
enough.
That's enough, yeah. I think, somehow being more excited about the whole idea and the descriptions of various things. I think maybe you didn't really focus on that because this is not the final talk. And maybe you'll do that in your final talk, but I think it's important to do that even in these practice talks. So I know you're doing another one with the VMware folks, so, and maybe you would think about ways to make it more exciting for yourself and for them for this next practice talk.
Okay.
I have some other comments. Let's see. So, I mean, do you want to talk about supervised versus unsupervised writes to differentiate between file system and anonymous pages, page writes? That might be one way to bring out the fact that there are two different kinds of page writes going on. This is with respect to slide 6, right? In slide 6, you have solution approaches, but that's only for unsupervised writes. It's the supervised writes you already talked about. So I think one of the reviewers also misunderstood he thought that these were the only three techniques, but you don't really need any of these three techniques if you're handling supervised writes.
Okay.
So maybe you can bring that. And
what is supervised?
Supervised is when you ask the OS to do the write for you.
Okay.
The OS, in some sense, supervises the write of the application. Unsupervised means the application directly writes to memory without going through the OS.
That's of what I read in slide
5. In slide 5. And I think you can use the supervised versus unsupervised terminology there.
Okay.
To make it more clear.
Okay.
Right. So here you say write and fault. Instead of that, you can write, you know, maybe say supervised versus unsupervised. And the reason for that is because write is not the only place where we could potentially use this technique. Right? We could use it for some other syscalls as well, which we haven't explored. And that way you're more generic about the technique.
Okay.
And the other thing was, I don't know if people feel, I mean, this is for the rest of the people here. Do you feel that it's important to talk about how the memory traces were obtained? Full system memory traces?
Actually,
briefly?
I'm suggesting removing that completely.
Yeah, actually, I've been thinking about removing that as well.
Removing what?
The how the traces were obtained.
Hmm.
I was thinking rejecting that and removing the details about the simulation. It's just replaying traces, right? We don't need more than that.
Well, I think you should have some detail in a backup slide because some people might have a question.
Okay, so what I do is to move those details to a backup slide.
Yeah, I think it would be good.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea for you to be ready in case somebody asks, but it's not relevant in the main presentation.
Right.
Okay.
And another thing is that I was thinking you should give it maybe a little more weight up to the related work because you have more work since we have the paper, right, about related work.
Yeah, I agree. I think you can put the Flex SC work also in there. I mean, the asynchronous syscalls is the, and you should probably put the references to the papers in the slide as well.
Yeah.
I think that would be important.
Okay. What additional related work I can add to what it is there right now?
The Flex SC?
Okay. But in the single system calls, that's why that's the Flex SC. Oh, no?
Right, and I think I sent you, we discussed some additional differences for the async syscalls. I don't know if you saw the email that I sent in the
video. Yeah, I saw the email, but I didn't want to, spend too much time on explaining all that difference.
Okay.
Yeah, I just put the two main differences I saw were the two more important ones.
Right. I think the other difference is that here you need a context. You need to create a thread to actually do this, right? So there is overhead of thread creation for async syscalls, which we do not incur. Right?
Right.
I think that's important. Okay.
Another thing is about prefetching. I would say that really the problem with prefetching is that it's just limited to sequential strings, right?
No.
That's the main issue.
No,
you can have fancy prefetching, but nobody uses it. It's just sequential stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, you also have asynchronous async calls, and we're talking, I mean, nobody uses that, but we're talking about that. And actually, in the paper, we talk about fancy prefetching. So I think we should try it as a,
Okay.
Yeah, you can say, I mean, if that's a concern, you can say something like mostly limited to sequential accesses or something like that. You can add that bullet before you say can incur false positives and negatives. You can have one more bullet there if you want. No, mostly limited to sequential accesses.
Okay.
You can add something like that. I think okay, so I think in terms of motivation, I think apart from the parallelism comment, I think you did mention the higher page fault rates that the new devices can sustain. I think that's an important motivation as well, right? That newer devices can sustain much higher page fault rates with little or let's say no loss in performance, which is new now, and I think that can add to the motivation part.
But I mean, I don't understand that if we have a system that performs very well for page fault, but the underlying device won't benefit from parallelism, then there's no point of doing this, right?
Sorry, I didn't understand.
If the underlying device won't take advantage of parallelism, will perform better if you have OIO of 10 compared to 1. There is no benefit of doing non-blocking rights.
But, I mean, what kind of device is that? All devices benefit from cloud sending a higher sending out.
Yeah.
At least it's scalar to do
exactly. That. So if that is the case, what is the real benefit of having more page for?
Why is having more people?
This is, do you have a comment?
Well, you can have more of them happening at once. So instead of having, you know, it restricted to either the number of cores or let's say number of threads that are happening, you're gonna end up with a lot of block threads and you really can only handle a couple of those write faults at once. Because some of them are going to put locks on certain pages and you won't be able to access them or move them around. But in the case of non-blocking writes, you can, in some of those, you saw that the number of outstanding write faults was really high. So I think on one of the server workloads, you said it was over 2,000. So having that many outstanding write faults at once allows you to handle them better and just have more of them, I guess, happening at once.
So you're also making the, I think, the same point that Ricardo is making, that you can have a lot more parallelism in terms of servicing the write faults. I think, Ricardo, in terms of what is the benefit of having more page fault ability to serve more page faults, I think it's not, yes, it's a benefit, but I'm pointing out that because you have the ability to serve more page faults, you put less in main memory, and that creates more opportunity for non-blocking writes, right? Because you can sustain higher page faults, you can survive with lesser amount of memory, right? And as you start reducing memory, there are more non-blocking write opportunities that get created.
I think another way of seeing this is that the bottom half handler, you know, the interrupt handler has to be extremely fast,
right?
Because nothing can run at the same time of that, right? Per core.
Yeah. Oh, you mean top half?
Non-blocking write, that handler can run even faster because it doesn't have to wait for the read.
Yeah. Not sure what you're saying.
Quite a motivation for this, even if we had a device that won't take much advantage of parallelism.
Okay.
So a good example is, imagine if all your page fault handlers had to make a read.
Mm-hmm.
At the interrupt handling, you can only have one instance of that handling, of that interrupt handling at the same time per core.
Mm-hmm.
So that atomic region has to be the smallest possible.
Yeah.
Before returning, but if you didn't have non-blocking writes, before returning from the interrupt, you have to actually read the page from disk.
So you're saying we can do non-blocking write in an interrupt handler?
We're doing non-blocking write in the page fault handler. Before us,
uh-huh.
You have to actually read from disk, so you are delaying the return of the interrupt. So it's not only about parallelism of the device; it's also about that.
Mm,
about more efficient page fault handling.
Okay, so I need to go now, but I didn't quite understand your last point, Ricardo. But I'll follow up offline with you on that one.
Okay. So, Brett, do you have any other comments?
I have several comments which I have on my laptop. I'll send it to you by email.
Okay, thank you.
And I did record this thing, so I'll send that to you as well.
Okay.
Right.